Gary Webb's book, Dark Alliance, covers an almost 15-year period in America, beginning with the fall of the Nicaraguan dictatorship under General Anastasio Somoza in 1979 to the socially progressive Sandinista regime. Despite the massive corruption of the Somoza regime, it had been a country considered friendly to the United States, meaning friendly to American corporations and often engaged in the anti-communist rhetoric of many countries in the midst of the Cold War. The rise of the Sandinista government was a thorn in the side of the Reagan administration, and it vowed to see the Sandinista government fail. Many groups, both inside and out of Nicaragua, were formed to disrupt the Nicaraguan government, and the CIA supported these groups. The CIA funded these groups in part by doing exactly what Gary Webb's book explained, by allowing massive amounts of cocaine to enter the United States, set up shop in black communities, declared a war on drugs to incarcerate large numbers of African Americans who used or sold these drugs, and protected the foreign kingpins from prosecution whenever local police or the DEA stumbled upon their operations. The kingpins would, in turn, send back part of the cocaine money to buy weapons and support armies against their native government. And while this may be the first time that you may have heard of CIA involvement of drug sales and trafficking, that would surely have been known to likely wind up in the United States to fund so-called friendly armies of people in countries thousands of miles away. Such involvement has been an ongoing part of the CIA and its predecessor, the OSS's activities since its earliest days, namely during the latter stages of the Second World War. An author named Alfred McCoy has written a book entitled The Politics of Heroin in Southeast Asia, originally published in 1972, which would go on to later be updated to a 2003 version entitled The Politics of Heroin, the CIA Complicity in the Global Drug Trade, published by Lawrence Hill Books, which is perhaps the single best book on the history and extent of CIA involvement in drugs during the last 50 years. Alfred McCoy chronicles the willingness of the U.S. military in the midst of the Second World War to trade more lenient prison conditions for information involving the Italian-controlled U.S. ports with imprisoned heroin dealer Lucky Luciano. The value of this information led to the commutation of his prison sentence and deportation to Italy after the war. While in Italy, he established a worldwide heroin empire, getting supplies from the Middle East, processing it in Italy, then shipping it to the United States. In the 1950s, the CIA allowed heroin production and trafficking to support armies led by exiled General Chiang Kai-shek in an effort for that army to attack communist China. These and other armies were spread across Thailand, Laos, and Burma, all of which were intended to be hostile to communist China. Certain of these operations would lead to disastrous results, as the CIA's supported armies weren't always the nation's legitimate army, and when the host nation found out, they might send an army out to destroy the CIA army or align themselves with an enemy nation, a situation that happened in Burma, which allied itself with China and destroyed a CIA-supported army there. The CIA also allowed heroin production in Vietnam, a practice promoted by the French in what was then known as French Indochina. After the French were defeated in their efforts to maintain control of that country, the United States stepped in and allowed and promoted heroin trafficking by Vietnamese military wings that included the heads of the Air Force and Navy, Generals Ky and Thu, both of whom would rule South Vietnam during the fight against the North. Criminal syndicates and tribal people in Vietnam called the Hmong also engaged in heroin trafficking. All were in a purported effort to fight communism, and all were supported by the United States. Not only would this heroin wind up on the streets of New York and in other major cities, but huge quantities were sold to American soldiers serving in Vietnam. An estimated 15% of soldiers in the Vietnam War were regular heroin users during this period. The CIA protected the growers and sellers of this heroin production. Eventually during the war, the Vietnamese government between rivals Ky and Thu would become a virtual drug production operation. It got so bad that 14-year-old girls sold heroin on roadside stands on the highway from Saigon to the army bases. Street vendors stuffed heroin in the pockets of GIs shopping in downtown Saigon. Because these governments were on the same side of the United States in fighting North Vietnam, U.S. officials did little to nothing. Given the 90% to 98% purity of the heroin there, compared to the 2% to 10% purity of heroin on the streets of America, American soldiers developed addictions to heroin that would be very difficult to break. In fact, thousands of addicts would be returned home to the U.S. every month and given almost no medical treatment for their problems. Furthermore, many addicts didn't want to indulge in their addictions alone and turned their friends onto the drugs. A cycle of addiction continued to expand. During the late 60s and 70s, there was a massive explosion in production of heroin in Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, and Burma as well. In Laos, one of the centers of production, the CIA transported opium, which would then be turned into heroin, from one set of operatives to another through the CIA-owned airline, Air America. Once again, the CIA supported right-wing military leaders' involvement in drug trafficking with the rationale that the money used from the trafficking would be used to help arm these armies and prevent a communist takeover in their countries. During the late 70s and 80s, heroin production shifted from Southeast Asia to Afghanistan, not coincidentally with the U.S. efforts to arm the Mujahideen in Afghanistan in an effort to incite the Soviet Union to engage in a war just as damaging as the U.S. had experienced in Vietnam. Heroin production exploded, and eventual terrorists like Osama bin Laden were trained, funded, and supported by the CIA. As a result of this massive CIA operation, Afghanistan became the largest heroin producer in the world, a position it still holds today. People such as Osama bin Laden, trained by the CIA, would eventually strike back against the United States, the country that had so effectively trained him, with devastating results. The extensive CIA training may explain why, after a massive effort and manhunt, Osama bin Laden is considered to still be alive, hiding in the mountains along the Afghani-Pakistani border. In the 1980s, under Ronald Reagan, the United States began following a similar path in Latin America with cocaine as it had with heroin in Asia for decades before. While Reagan would declare a war on drugs that would seal off the Caribbean ports of entry into the United States, all this did was shift the point of entry through Mexico, establishing a network of drug exports that by 1994 would reach $30 billion, while Mexico's oil exports would only total an estimated $7 billion. During the 1980s and 90s, governments in Paraguay, under military dictator Alberto Stroessner, Panamanian dictator Manuel Noriega, military dictatorships in Bolivia, Colombia, and Peru, were all engaged in the significant expansion of cocaine production, all of whom enjoyed good relations with the United States, not to mention the Nicaragua-Contra pipeline that was a subject in Gary Webb's book. But back on the home front in the 1980s, Ronald Reagan's war on drugs took the form of mandatory minimum jail sentences and massive increases in arrest and incarceration rate. For example, in 1977, drug arrests in the United States went from 569,000 in 1977 to 1,155,000 by 1988. The United States prison population went from 369,930 in 1981 to 627,402 in 1988, almost doubling. Under President Bush, the increase would continue even more sharply. Drug czar William Bennett called for an 85% increase in prison capacity. By the time Bush would leave office, the U.S. population would be approximately 1.3 million people. In the intervening years, neither the policies nor the trends would change much. So by today, we have a prison population in excess of 2 million people, many of whom are incarcerated for drug-related offenses. Yet during this massive increase in prison population, it's what makes the CIA's connection to and detection of these large-scale importers of cocaine that much more shocking. U.S. drug policies put in place in Colombia a plan to fumigate cocaine production, but it limited the fumigation of lands where coca leaves were grown to areas controlled by leftist rebels in the country. The right-wing government and who ran the country also owned land on which the majority of Colombia cocaine levels were grown for production and exported. The fumigation activities of the United States did not touch those areas. The result has been a boom in cocaine production and consolidation of production and distribution in the hands of people considered friendly to the United States government. A similar pattern occurred in Bolivia, where the military effectively ruled the cocaine production in that country. Because the right-wing governments under military dictatorships were considered friendly to the United States government, cocaine production was allowed to boom with little interference. Yet the use of such drugs by U.S. citizens increasingly landed them in jail. This has been a background of the CIA involvement in drug trafficking, and there are many books besides Gary Webb's book and the books by Alfred McCoy that I mentioned. Interested listeners are invited to read the book Whiteout, The CIA, Drugs, and the Press by Alexander Cockburn and Jeffrey St. Clair, published by Verso Books in 1998. This book further explores the fallout from Gary Webb's book and how the media galvanized to suppress this story, namely by blaming irrational African-American paranoia. Cockburn and St. Clair then explore the basis for this so-called black paranoia and investigate biological, psychological, and medical experiments conducted on African-Americans within the last 50 years that demonstrate that African-Americans were not in fact paranoid, but victims of government operations that many people don't know about. The authors also explore at length the role of Mexico in the importation of drugs into the United States and the protection given by the United States to the highest levels of the Mexican government and military who were involved in the trafficking of narcotics. Cockburn and St. Clair make an extremely damaging case of the United States' complicity in drug trafficking, connections that even involved former President Bill Clinton. Listeners are also invited to read Drugs, Oil, and War, The United States in Afghanistan, Colombia, and Indochina by Peter Del Scott, that was published by Rauman and Littlefield in 2003. Professor Scott makes a very convincing inquiry into the role of the United States in using its relationship with drug-dealing proxy armies into areas with significant corporate interests, namely oil deposits. Professor Scott's work looks at some of the same countries we've already mentioned and other authors have written about, but emphasizes an economic relationship that is often overlooked in their analyses. Former Drug Enforcement Agency agent Michael Levine wrote a book, The Big White Lie, in which he chronicles his own effort to crack down on Bolivian traffickers, but how such Bolivian traffickers were protected by the CIA, and how his own agency, the DEA, would have to take a hands-off approach to huge drug traffickers because of the perception that that the political power of these people was important to United States security, despite overwhelming evidence that they were pouring tons of cocaine into the United States, evidence that was even in the hands of the Drug Enforcement Agency and the Justice Department. The Big White Lie was published by Thundermouth Press in 1993. The final recommended book on the subject is Air America by Christopher Robbins. This book discusses the history of the CIA-owned airline, Air America, which at one time was the largest airline in the world, and the operations that it conducted in Southeast Asia. The author appears to revere the pilots, who were a type of adventurous mercenary who fought largely unknown wars in Southeast Asia and transported opium during this time, but it is easily readable and discusses a topic that very few Americans know anything about. Air America was written in 1979, and a paperback edition was published by Avon Books.